Just before the hour of 6 o'clock, you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Coming up in just a couple of minutes is the KIUC Board of Directors, the candidates for Board of Directors debate. If you're tuned in, you're Akamai, you're going to be listening to this great debate. My recommendation is get someone else on the telephone so they can hear these candidates and they can be educated on who they want to vote for also. We're going to put them on right now, and we'll be in the studio if you have any phone calls. 826-7771. Here we go.
Hello, good evening, especially to our KKCR listeners. And I'd like to welcome all of you, and thank you very much for being here. I'm Randy from Spokane, and out on the shore here at the Church of the Pacific. And I just wanted to extend my aloha for allowing us the privilege of your facilities. And we have our candidates here, too, are making their way. But I'd like to give a shout-out to our audience. So how's about an aloha from the audience?
Aloha.
One more time.
Aloha.
All right. So our first, we're going to first go down the row, and everybody's going to get 2 minutes to say something about themselves. Jan ten Bruggenkate, you are our first speaker.
Thank you. I'm Jan ten Bruggenkate. I've lived on Kauai for something north of 40 years. I'm a Molokai boy. I was the science writer for the Honolulu Advertiser. There are very few science writers left anymore, and the Honolulu Advertiser no longer exists, unfortunately. I retired in 2007 and currently run my own communications company. 3 years ago, I was elected to the board at KIUC. At that time, our utility had only one major piece of generation in its planning, and that was an oil-fired power plant. Since that time, we've shelved that oil-fired plant. We've diverted the funding for it to renewables. We're currently on track by the end of this year to have more solar on our KIUC system than any utility in the United States. We're also aggressively moving forward on working with a biomass provider that's planning to use some of the albizia trees that are a scourge on our environment for energy, and they'll be replanted by less invasive species. We're also continuing an aggressive program to investigate places on the island where hydroelectric power will be useful. These are initiatives that I can't claim to have done them alone. We have a strong 9-member board elected by the people of this community who are moving in this direction. I'd like to continue moving in that direction. I commit to doing so aggressively and with the interests of the community in mind. Thank you.
Jonathan Jay.
Hello, Nakako. My name is Jonathan Jay. Thank you for coming out to the Church of Pacific tonight. It's a beautiful evening. Thank you also for the folks who are listening live on KKCR. And thank you for the folks at KIUC and the Chamber of Commerce for bringing us all together this evening. I was an original founding member of Apollo Kauai, an energy watchdog group here on the island a few years back, and it's been nice to see that project move forward. I'm also an original founding member of Zero Waste Kauai, a project that endeavors to take our waste stream and reduce it, hypothetically, to zero, which would be really great for the length of our waste facilities. Also, Power to the People is an organization I founded a couple years ago to help KIC move forward in some of its strategic goals. And I'm a co-host for Out of the Box, which is a show on KKCR, a call-in talk show. It's on Thursday evenings from 4 to 6, and so you may recognize my voice right now. I'm running for the KIC Board of Directors because of three things. I want to try and help KIC reduce the power rates and reduce the bills. I want to keep our energy dollars here on island instead of exporting our dollars for diesel out of the economy forever. And I also want to help KIC better fulfill its mission of informing and engaging the members and empowering the community as a democratic, member-driven cooperative. I hope that we'll have a chance to go through a bunch of questions tonight that you will find informative and engaging, and I look forward to some of the questions that you may have from the audience later tonight. Again, my name is Jonathan Jay, and I thank you for your attention.
Stu Burley.
Good evening. My name is Stu Burley, and I'm here asking for your vote for the KLUC board. I was a member of the board 4 years ago, so I served a term of 3 years, and then I got off the board and took care of my sick wife for a year, and now is time, I feel, to get back onto the board to complete the projects that we started 2 and 3 years ago. My background, I helped to open PMRF, and I worked for 46 years there, helping to run all the operations, the contracts, the all of the improvements. When we opened up PMRF, there were 7 of us. There's now over 1,000. I'm president of the Navy League, president of Marine Technology Society. I advocate risk management. In fact, I'm going back to school to update myself next month. And I, that 30 seconds there kind of throws me off when it pops up. Okay. And so if I can get back on the board, what I'd like to do is to try and complete or revise the strategic plan that's being written. I'd like to help the members get more information, even though the Currents magazine has a lot of information, and that's what everyone should be reading. But I think we can do a better job of that. One of my goals is to make sure that the members do get more information as KIUC expands and grows. Thank you.
Jack Benzie.
Aloha. My name's Jack Benzie, and I live up here in Princeville, although I do still own a house down in Kekaha, where I originally lived when I moved to the island 7 years ago.
Closer?
Okay. Can you hear me now? My name's Jack Benzie, and I live up here in Princeville. I recently retired the end of December from a 36-year career with the U.S. government. For the last 7 years that I've been on island here, I was the technical director of the Navy base over on the west side. And while I was there, the base instituted programs so that by the end of 15, the base will be 100% renewable energy for all of its hotel loads that operate on the base there. While I was working for the Navy, I was the Navy's representative on the Renewable Energy Committee at the Kauai Economic Development Board. I do have a bachelor's degree in engineering and a master's in business administration. I currently have a consulting company, Lunar Consulting, LLC. We teach leadership utilizing noble activities for results, and I help Kauai-based businesses learn the ropes on how to get government contracts so some of that money that the federal government spends on island goes to local companies to do that. I would hope to bring some of that expertise to KIUC so that we could help become more efficient and do things in a way that would help us to lower our rates, and I support a renewable, sustainable source of energy for the island. Thank you very much.
Carol Bain.
Aloha. Aloha to the radio listeners. My name's Carol Bain. It's a pleasure to be here this evening and to talk to you. I've only lived on Kauai since 1985. I own a home with my husband. We have an electric vehicle, and we have solar hot water on our home and a small photovoltaic system, and we have a small ebb and flow hydroponic garden, and we try to recycle and conserve energy, try to conserve, be efficient, and recycle. A bit about me, I teach journalism at Kauai Community College part-time. I enjoy that very much. I volunteer my time with nonprofit organizations, including the Malie Foundation. I am the vice president of that organization. Some of you may attend the Kauai Mokihana Festival. They put on hula competitions. I enjoy that nonprofit organization very much. I write grants and do the grant reporting for that organization. That's quite rewarding. It's also rewarding to serve on KIUC board. Aloha, and it's a pleasure to be here.
And Alan Smith is our last.
Thank you. Aloha ahiai. Good evening, everyone. I am Alan Smith, and I was born in Waimea a few years ago, and I attended St. Teresa School, a grade school there in Kekaha, and later on I went to Kamehameha Schools as a seventh grader, and I graduated there in 1963. Then off to college I went, and my baccalaureate degree is in agricultural economics and engineering. Spent most of my working career in agribusiness. I worked for Amfac Inc. For 20 years in various supervisory positions in agriculture and the business here in Hawaii and on the mainland. Worked for 20 years after that for Grove Farm Company as their chief operating officer, and retired as senior vice president in 2006. Most of our family lives here on Kauai, and why am I doing this? I think it's important that we all involve ourselves in making this island a better place. And my career has taken me in public service for profit and for non-profit organizations. I served, as an example, as a director of the Waipawa Foundation down the road, and my present position there is at vice president, and we're doing and on our way to doing better things out there in the Ahapua of Waipa. I'm experienced in collaboration and sensitive to our cultural ways and our environment. Thank you very much.
We'll begin with Jonathan Jay with the first question. We're going to be rotating down around the group. Jonathan, if elected, what is your one strongest attribute that you would bring to the board?
My name is Jonathan Jay, and if I were elected to the board, I think the strongest attribute I would bring is a very creative ability for creative thinking and problem solving. Also, team working and building a team of like-minded people together and working together. Those are the things that I get great satisfaction from. I think some of the challenges that face KIUC are as a result of years and years of investments that have been made into the way things are already and the way things have been. Our business model there is such that KIUC can really only make money if they're selling electricity, for example. And it would be nice if we could decouple that so that KIUC could shift from selling you electricity to providing you the electric solutions that you need to get through your day. It would be nice if that transition could be made. And I think that one of the ways to do that is to bring new thinking into the board. And so I think that's something that I would be able to do, think out of the box. Again, my name is Jonathan Jay, and I thank you for your attention.
Stu Burley, restating the question, if elected, what is your one strongest attribute that you would bring to the board?
I think my strong attribute for the board, if I am elected, is to try and inject what I call risk management. Some of you have heard of that. And utilize what I've learned in college, what I've learned at the schools. I've been to three or four risk management type schools, and try and outline the pluses and minuses of every project that does come along at in KIUC. In the risk business, you not only take the risk of today or tomorrow or this year or next year, but with all of the projects that are coming online, the risk should be looked at 20 years from now, 30 years from now. Now, I'll admit I won't be around, but some of you will, and our children will, and our grandchildren, and now that I'm a great-grandfather, my great-grandchildren will be around right here on Kauai. I've been here 56 years, and my family just won't leave. They just hang around with me all the time. So that's what I would take. I would utilize the training that I've had, the great training that the Navy gave me, and now that I'm retired, I would take the training that I'm about to receive and update when I go to the risk management courses for a week on the mainland. And I do this just to make sure that the new procedures for risk taking, I get those up to date in my mind, and also utilize those in the projects that KIUC is planning in the future. My name is Stu Burley, and I'm asking for your vote, and I thank you very much.
Aloha. My name is Jack Benzie, and the one strongest attribute, I think I have a lot of strong attributes that would be very useful to KIUC in the membership. If I had to narrow it down to one, I would say probably my ability to work for process improvement. I've had a lot of training and experience in that area in my years with the government, and I know how to sit a diverse group of people down and look at how we do things, why we do them the way we do, and get them to see ways that we can do them better for the benefit of the membership. I think one of the ways that will help us to be more efficient and lower our rates at KUC is to become more efficient. And one of the ways to do that is to look at how we do things. And I will bring a new set of eyes that's currently not there at KUC to look at how things are being done and maybe offer some, in Jonathan's word, out-of-the-box type solutions that ways that maybe things can be done that I've seen done other places that aren't necessarily done here that would help us to become more efficient so that we can give back the members a better value for the dollar that they spend. And that's probably my strongest attribute. And so I'll leave it at that instead of going to the others. My name is Jack Benzie, and I would appreciate one of your votes. Thank you very much.
Yes, this is Carol Bain, and to answer the question, my strongest attribute, my immediate response was, well, I'm an educator, and then I reflected on that, and boy, that sounds rather assuming of me that I could educate or presume to educate, and then I realized I've been, teaching public communications, and I've been teaching journalism, and then I've realized the changes in technology that I've experienced, the whole evolution from cathode ray tubes to digital technology, from videotape to all of the changes in technology that I've seen and how I've had to adapt. And I've gone from teaching journalism in the standard theory, and now I've had to learn software and then new changes in software. And here I'm trying to adapt and learn how a utility is adapting to new technology today. And we're trying to bring this forward and take the best advantage of what our technologies can be for our community in a changing world, and to do that in an efficient way. And a cost-effective way. And if I can just bring a few messages of that and try to allow this transition to go smoothly and be presumptuous enough to educate us, then I feel I've shared my experience. Thank you. My name's Carol Bain.
Hi, this is Jan Ten Bruggen, Kate. I spent a career as a newspaper writer, and I think a strength there is the ability to analyze issues. And I could be tooting my own horn, but I've also been recognized by the Hawaiian Academy of Science, the Nature Conservancy, Association of Planning Officials, those kinds of organizations have identified work that I've done in analyzing issues as being of some value. But the larger thing is balance. I think that I bring to the board an ability to balance the needs of the community, to look at rate structures and make sure that they don't subsidize one class of users to the detriment of another, to make sure that our least wealthy members aren't damaged by policies that help our businesses or our better off customers. I think I have an ability to help our board balance energy resources, generation resources, making decisions between things like oil-fired power and solar power and questions about storage of energy and so on. And I think I bring a balance when it comes to assessing risk, assessing economic risk, assessing future risk involving generation, assessing risks involving regulation. So, yeah, maybe balance.
Thank you. Aloha. I bring to the board an ability to effectively work with diverse minds and understandings and people to accomplish good goals or good results. A myriad of experience over several decades of being a contributing member of this community in the business and social world is behind me, and I can confidently say that I can work with a lot of people and achieve happy results along the way. Maybe you can say I'm full of aloha. Yes, I am. And I have great empathy and understanding for all the people that live here on Kauai. Growing up here, you know, you're forced to adapt and understand diverse peoples, regardless of who they are and where they're from and why they're here and why they left. But really, my experience and my genuine understanding and feeling for fellow human beings is what I can bring, along with my technical expertise that brought me through my past professional career. Thank you very much, and I'm hopeful that you will smile upon me. Thank you.
That was Alan Smith.
Yes, Alan Smith. Still is.
Still is. That was Alan Smith speaking. So Stu Burley will be the first to take our second question. Since every resident of Kauai is affected in many ways by KIUC decisions to supply electricity to the entire island by varying methods, and non-members of KIUC cannot vote, what solutions do you have in order for each resident to have a voice before major decisions are made by the KIUC Board of Directors?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that when decisions are required of KIUC, then members who actually buy electricity should be the primary voters. Now, to get the non-members out to vote, I feel that some way, KIUC should be talking with them to find out why they are not members and try and get them to, well, let's say just join the team. Another way is to try and move some of the publicity that KIUC has and to make sure that more and more members get the information on how to vote, when to vote, etc. Now let's take an issue. If KIUC has a very important project or new type of effort, and there's discussion on it, and if all members of the board are not on the team, as you might say, in their minds, then I feel that that project, the outline of the project, not the decision, because the decision is up to the board who actually represents the members, but the community outside of KIUC, all the members should be part of the decision. And decisions that come out of the KIUC should not be established and written up in the Garden Island and catch everybody by surprise. But in the future, as more and more people of Kauai become members and stay away from being non-members, then KIUC should actively promote what's happening and also promote their participation in helping the board make the right decisions. Again, we have to take a risk here. My name is Stu Burley. Thank you.
That was a complex question, so I'm going to state it one more time to help all the candidates be able to really have it freshly in their mind. When I come to you, if you need that asked one more time, just kind of give me the signal, and I will repeat the question. But this is, you're hearing it for the second time as well as the listener. Number two. And we have Jack Benzie is up next. Since every resident of Kauai is affected in many ways by KIUC decisions to supply electricity to the entire island by varying methods, and non-members of KIUC cannot vote, what solutions do you have in order for each resident to have a voice before major decisions are made by the KIUC Board of Directors?
Aloha. My name is Jack Benzie, and I'm not sure I agree with the premise of that question in that all residents that don't use electricity are affected by the decisions that the electric utility makes. If you're currently a resident of the island and you're not a member of KIUC, there's only two reasons for that. One is you don't use electricity, or the other one is you've chosen not to be a member, but you are still eligible to be a member. So if you're in the latter category there, I would suggest you become a member so you can have more input. If you don't use electricity, I'm not sure that any of the decisions that KIUC makes will affect you. But if elected to the board, as a member of the board, I would not ask anybody whether they were a member or not a member if they wanted to make some input to me for some issue that was before KIUC board at the time. I would hear anybody who wanted to offer input as to what their concerns were for some topic that was at the board for discussion and for a decision. And so I think whether they were a member or not would be a moot point, but I think there are people that aren't members for a reason. Either they don't use electricity or they choose not to be a member, and I don't think we should force anything upon people who choose to not be involved.
Can I clarify? Because I think maybe the question isn't clear enough. When somebody's a non-member, that means they don't get a vote. Only one bill-paying member of the household is a member. So if there's six people that live in that house, there's one vote. Oftentimes there are many grown working adults that live in one house. So people don't choose to be a non-member. They are a non-member because they're in a house with only one vote. Or maybe they rent and their landlord pays the electric bill. So there are many non-members who aren't actually very happy about that.
Right, and I guess probably my 2 minutes are up, but since you repeated the question, there's also the other side of that coin where there are some individuals who have three or four accounts, and should they get three or four votes because of that? Somehow you have to equalize how you do the voting in order to make it equal, and there's going to be people on one side or the other side that that don't fall in that category. So I don't, you know, however it comes up with, there will probably be somebody that's not happy. But
okay.
I'm Jack Benzie, and I would appreciate your vote. Thank you.
And Carol Bain, are you understanding the question?
I believe, Felicia, what we're describing here is a different understanding. I think what we're realizing is an agricultural cooperative, of which there are around 900 in the entire United States.
Agricultural energy cooperative?
A utility.
A utility, yes. Okay. A utility cooperative.
Mm-hmm. A rural utility cooperative has a structure, which is a little different from the way our county government is set up, in which right now in a county government, yes, it's if you're over 18 and you're registered to vote, you can register to vote. But if, you know, what an ag electric cooperative is set up under a state law that allows one member, one vote because of you have an actual account with the electric utility. And so if a husband has an account and the wife has a separate account, then they both get a vote. But you're right. If it's a family and with one account, there is one vote. So it's a different structure that you're describing. So it may be a foreign model for some people to understand. But that is just a different structure. And so it's the way the state law is set up. But it does allow for around 30,000 accounts that are currently set up in this county, and so you have around 30,000 actual voters.
Okay, and for the sake of the listener, I'm just going to read it one more time. Since every resident of Kauai is affected in many ways by KIUC decisions to supply electricity to the entire island by varying methods, and non-members of KIUC cannot vote, what solutions do you have in order for each resident to have a voice before major decisions are made by the KIUC Board of Directors? It's a complex question.
This is Jan Tenbruggen, Kate. It's not that complex a question. Currently, under the bylaws of KIUC, each electric customer has a vote. If you have three rental houses, you still only have one vote. It's set up along a democratic policy. There are communities in which both members of a family of two would have a vote, and in some of them, each of them has a half a vote. And so if it's a family of one, or one person in the family gets that family's vote, they get a single vote. I'm not sure there's an example of a cooperative in which people who do not have a direct financial interest, which is to say have signed their name on the line, have a deposit in place at the utility, get to have a vote. But the question you asked is, do they have a voice? And I would argue that our residents, whether or not they have an electric account in their name, do have a voice. Most of the folks sitting at this table have telephones, and many of them, myself included, have my home phone number listed in the book. People do call me when they have questions. They do call me when they have complaints. It's not that difficult. When I go to Costco, we have energy conversations in the aisles. When I go to Safeway or Times, we have energy conversations. I sit as chair of the County Charter Review Commission. We have energy conversations there. Has nothing to do with the Charter Review Commission. So I do think that we're a small community. People know who the board members are, and they have access to those board members. I'll use the example of Jonathan Jay, who before he was a member, came and appeared before the board and regularly spoke with board members and discussed policy. So that opportunity is there. Thank you.
And that was Jan Ten Brutengate.
Aloha. Alan Smith. If someone is not a member, there are several opportunities that that individual may have to express his or her concerns to the board members. We are, write us a letter, call us by phone, stop us in the, on the street, talk to our families. You know, that's always an open avenue of approach, or just write a letter to the co-op, stating your concerns, and no doubt your board members will make sure that, they get addressed or, listened to. But it is very comforting to hear that people are wanting to, participate further. People, our citizenry on Kauai, and this is reality. We got 30,000 members out there. And lucky this election, we'll have 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 that will cast votes. And that's, sounds apathetic, but that's true. The same goes for our political elections. Our participation needs to be kicked up a lot. But, you know, the ones that are not members, you have opportunities and spread the word that your directors are open-minded and open-eared. And we get browbeaten a lot, and we take it with a smile. Thank you very much. Alan Smith talking to you.
Jonathan Jay.
Thank you. This is Jonathan Jay. I think this is a really fascinating question, because I think it goes to the heart of some of the things that KAC is really wrestling with some difficulty as an organization. Electricity affects everyone on the island. There's nobody that it doesn't affect. I don't care if you live off the grid. If you think you live off the grid, it still affects you. When you drive on the streets, you want to have streetlights that work. When you go to the grocery stores, you want to have, your ice cream is frozen. I know I do. I love ice cream, and I hate it when it gets all soggy. So there's really no such thing as living off the grid. I lived off the grid for 2 years, and that's one of the realizations that I had, things that I learned, is there's no way to escape the grid. It's there whether you want it or not. And let's face it, a lot of people do want it. I mean, electricity does amazing things. We have lights on in this building right now. Have a microphone that's working right now. We have an FM broadcast that's happening right now. Electricity is wonderful. But there are folks who... there's only 26,000 people who have memberships on Kauai in KIUC, and there's 70,000 people who live here. So I think that KIUC can do some creative thinking about how to get more people plugged into its utility, into its cooperative. REI is an example of a co-op, and anybody who wants to become a member of REI can walk in and give them a dollar, and they're a member of REI. And, you know, and anybody who wants to use electricity should have the same opportunity with KIUC. Another example I'll give you is petitions. If you want to petition KIUC with a complaint or an observation, they only recognize the signatures of members. Well, what that means is they're turning a deaf ear to the community, and I know that a good co-op never wants to do that. So those are just some examples, and thank you for your time.
Again, I'm Stu Burley, and I thought about this a little bit as I listened to everybody, and I know I have an advantage being able to speak again. So that everyone can get a vote, members and non-members would have to, there would have to be a bylaw change. Someone would have to go in and make a motion to change the bylaw, and that would have to be studied, and the board would have to vote on whether, and again, the board represents the people, and
thank you.
It would have to be a bylaw change.
Thank you. Jack Benzie, you have the third question. KIUC's office building lease of over $90,000 a month expires in 2020. What opportunities do you suggest to try to save money for the co-op by moving the KIUC offices to a new location?
Hi. Aloha. My name is Jack Benzie, and I don't have any suggestions right now other than we would have to look at what other facilities are available that would meet the needs, and if there are, and they're at a lower cost, then consider those. If the lease is up, then certainly the lease is renegotiable, and it can be negotiated for whatever the best deal is that the co-op can get. I'm not that familiar with the facilities we have right now or how utilized they are, whether they're overutilized or underutilized, so I can't really speak to that. Certainly, whatever facilities we get at the time the lease expires, we would want to be a good match for what the requirement is. For however many people there are that have to work in those buildings and what the requirements are, we would want to match those up. If we have excess capacity, then we would want to get rid of some of that excess capacity. But if they're cramped right now, then we would probably want to get more capacity so that we can be more efficient. But again, I'm kind of talking from not very, I haven't been around the building there hardly at all, and I don't really know what's in the building, so it's hard to speak to that. But I'm Jack Benzie, and if elected, I'll know what's in that building. Thanks.
Aloha, I'm Carol Bain. The makes sense. 2020 is not that far off, and I believe that the market is right. We should consider looking at some property, and I believe that should be something we could definitely look into. When the lease expires, have a building that is more affordable, that is, I will say, a very nice building. But I agree that I believe that is the lease is a bit high, and I would think we could be more frugal, find a piece of property that is more affordable. I believe it's a buyer's market. We could look and research that now, and why not consider a piece of property, look very carefully, research it, and by the year 2020, plan well and have it ready to move into when the lease expires, and perhaps have it be very affordable and save our members money. I think that sounds like a wise and prudent thing to do, and I don't see any reason why the board shouldn't look into it and encourage the staff to research that. Sounds like a wise idea to me. That's my
And you're report. Carol Bain.
Okay. My name's Carol Bain, and why not? I think actually we have been kind of thinking about it.
So I'm going to reread the question for Jan Ten Bruttenkate. KIUC's office building lease of over $90,000 a month expires in 2020. What opportunities do you suggest to try to save money for the co-op by moving the KIUC offices to a new location?
This is Jan Tenbruggen-Kate. My sense is, I talked earlier about balance, that at this time, that question isn't one that we need to address. We're trying to move this cooperative aggressively into renewables at far lower than our cost of oil to drive our rates down. But while we're talking about that building was built for Kauai Electric Company. It was built as a hardened facility so that if we have another hurricane, it'll still be standing, and it's the place from which we're going to be able to build back out into the community, build our grid back into the community. So discussions about tossing a building that was built specifically for our purposes and is meeting our purposes is probably not appropriate at this time. I think what we should do is stay the course and continue our efforts to get reliable, renewable energy onto our grid at costs far below our cost of oil and to help drive our cost of energy down. Thank you. This is Jan Tenbruggen-Kate, and I'm passing off to Alan Smith.
Oh, thank you for calling me that. A little bit of history. Jan touched on it, but you know that it was Kauai Electric was a for-profit company, and they always did well. They were under the purview of the watchful eye of the Public Utilities Commission. So that's a different ballgame, and that's what we inherited when we bought the company. But I think This offers us some great opportunities when the lease gets closer to expiring, whether we make a business decision to stay there, to build another facility, to move into another company-owned piece of property. Those opportunities will be available to us. And it's your director's charge in their due diligence to pursue these various business opportunities when they arise. I think, on the other hand, just to look at that high rent that we're paying is can't be just taken in a box. I mean, we can't. There's some penalties to getting out of the rent as we exist today. So there are several issues that go along with it. Yes, it is a high cost item, and perhaps when we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. And that's something to be cognizant of. Thank you very much. Alan Smith, signing off temporarily.
Thank you, sir.
Jonathan?
Thank you. The lease that KIC has today was purchased from Kauai Electric when the transition was made. It was a bad lease deal then, and it's a bad lease deal now. It's over $90,000 a month. If you do the math, that's over $1.1 million a year. Over the course of 20 years, we'll do a little bit more math. I won't do a lot more math tonight, but you can work with me that $1 million a year for 20 years is $20 million. So at the end of 20 years, in the year 2020, we're going to look back and we're going to say, well, what kind of value does KIEC have for the $20 million that have been spent for the lease? And the answer is zero. So that's not a great value in terms of equity that the co-op could have. Now, I'm not going to go back and try and second guess all the decisions that were made before I think any of us in the room were at the table. But I think that it does make good sense to be prudent and to take a look at what kind of strategic investment might be of value to the co-op in terms of reducing the overhead that we have to fold into the electrical prices that we're all paying every month. So that's the thing I'd like to underscore in regards to the lease. It's $1.1 million a year. It's $20 million over the course of 20 years. And what do we want to have? What kind of value do we want to have when we're done? And so looking forward, maybe we can make some different decisions. My name is Jonathan Jay, and I humbly request one of your three votes. Thank you.
Hi, this is Stu Burley again. And when the lease is up in 2020, we have to realize that KIUC is a good tenant right now in that building. We're entrenched in that building. It was built for the electric company. It's there for us. We're an electric company. We're an electric co-op, a utility co-op, but we're the same, almost same people working in there. What I would consider in 20 years, if I'm still here, what I would consider is looking at another place, not getting another contractor or consultant to go out there for a high price, but to look at other areas. But you have to realize the cost of that building was so small back then when it was built, and the cost of new buildings, astronomical. So would it be prudent to spend a few million, I mean many millions, to build a new building? Or would it be better for us to just stay where we're at and maybe just put in a couple of improvements, which right now you won't find very many improvements because it is being kept very well by KIUC. So probably bottom line, what I would do, I would just recommend that we stay right there and continue to pay the rent. Maybe negotiate to get a lower rent if we could do that. That's my input to that question, and I'm Stu Burley. Thank you.
Question number four, we're going to start with Carol Bain. Should there be a penalty fee assessed to members who are refusing a smart meter to their homes or businesses, and why or why not?
Thank you, Felicia. A penalty fee assessed to smart... No, there's no penalty fee being discussed. I don't think that term is appropriate, even. The whole purpose... KIUC provides services. One of the services is that the meter is put onto the home that measures the electric usage. Whether the meter itself, as it's measuring the usage, is serviced by a person that comes and checks it, or is it done automatically? Whatever the cost of providing the service adds up to be, well, whatever services that cost to provide that electricity can be assessed and analyzed for every residence, for every business. But I don't think that we should call that a penalty. What every business that or commercial use or residential use that uses our electricity, they're simply using the service. So, no, I wouldn't call that a penalty at all. So I don't believe that's been decided. What we'll do over a year's time is analyze how much it costs to deliver services to various users, whether it's residents or commercial, and if the use of the... If one group of people costs more than another, perhaps the entire cooperative will bear that cost. We'll probably describe that to the Public Utilities Commission, and we'll make a decision as a cooperative what's the best way to go. But the last thing I want to see are people who say are already having difficulty paying their bills having extra costs put onto them. So I don't want to see any penalties.
Thank you, Carol Bain. Jan ten Bruggenkate?
This is Jan ten Bruggenkate. I think the concept of penalties for people who refuse a smart meter is fundamentally flawed. Shouldn't happen. We should, however, have a clear picture down the road once we get the smart meters that are going in, which they're not yet. We're still in the process of rolling out this program. Once they're in, we should determine whether there is a differential cost. Perhaps a cost should be charged to the other way. But we don't know that yet because we don't have them in. We don't know how many they are. We haven't figured out how to balance the various different charges. And my gut feeling is that I'd vote against a charge anyway. But I'm not going to make that decision without having some data in front of me. Thank you.
This is Alan Smith. A penalty is incurred when you do something wrong. Illegal use of hands, 15 yards. You know? I mean, these people didn't do anything wrong by refusing a meter, so no penalty, period. Allocation of costs, that's what we're after. If it costs more, let's look at it. Obviously, whatever changes, it'll be put into their rates. Any rate changes goes through the oversight of the Public Utilities Commission. It's not the whim of the board or staff. That all needs to be rated out. So, yes, no penalties. Allocation of costs, yes. True costs. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Jonathan Jay. I would say no. I would just say flat out no. If you want a smart meter, you should be free to have a smart meter. If you don't want a smart meter, you should be free to not have a smart meter. There should be no extra costs or penalties or fees or assessments or any kind of additional monetary extraction associated with that. It's sort of irking, I think, to some people who chose not to have the smart meter in the first place. To then come back, if KAC were to then come back and say, oh, and by the way, for not having to choose the smart meter, we're going to give you an extra $12 a month surcharge. I think that would be kind of like rubbing salt in the wounds. So I would just say simply no, absolutely not. No additional surcharge. You should be free in, free out. That's democratic, that's fair, that's cooperative. And I think that's what we all look for from our co-op. And so I have every reasonable expectation that that's exactly the course of action that KAC will follow. Again, my name is Jonathan Jay, and thank you for listening.
I'm Stu Burley, and if that were to come up as a question in the board, and I were on the board, I would always vote no. No assessment, no penalty, no. Everybody is different. Everybody has a concept of what is healthy and what is not healthy. And if a person just doesn't want it on their home, that's their prerogative. They're a member of KIUC. They're a member of the co-op. And so I would never vote to assess them, those that don't want the meter. Now, human nature. Human nature is this. If 98%, I'm just using a number, 98% of the people of Kauai put a smart meter or allow a smart meter to go on their home, and after a while they hear rumors that, gosh, it really does work and it's looking good and their bill looks better, I feel that humans will tend to look at that and there would be more non-smart meter people calling up KIUC in the future, asking for their smart meter, asking for a smart meter to be installed on their home. So, no, don't assess them. Just wait for everyone to come around on the island. It's the best thing to do. Thank you. My name is Stu Burley.
KKCR Honolulu, KKUA Kealoha.
Aloha. My name's Jack Benzie, and I guess the disadvantage of going first is you don't know what anybody else is going to say, but the disadvantage of going last is everybody's already said it. So I think it's pretty unanimous that nobody thinks there should be a penalty to anybody, whether they do or don't choose to have a smart meter. And the gist of the question seemed to go a little bit toward cost allocation, and I think in the utility or in any business, you have some common costs and you have some special costs. And I think the common costs should be allocated amongst everybody for their bill, and if there's special costs that come up, those should go to whatever the special circumstance is. Whoever's getting that special service would pay for those costs. If I decide I don't like my power lines coming in on the pole and I want them buried to get to my house, then I should incur that special cost of burying those lines, not make everybody else do it. So there are ways to allocate the cost, but I think everybody's in agreement that people shouldn't be penalized whether they choose one kind of meter over another kind of meter. And I'm Jack Benzie, and I would appreciate one of your votes. Thank you.
And that was a great segue into our next question, which will start with Jan Ten Brutengate. How about underground electrical power lines? The lines would be hurricane-proof, and there would be no more poles and wires seen throughout the island.
This is Jan Ten Brutengate. I get that question from my wife on a regular basis. She didn't submit it, no. There are a couple of issues. One of them is that undergrounding power lines is extraordinarily expensive. Another is that repairing failures in underground power lines is both extraordinarily expensive and time-consuming. Outages tend to last a lot longer. Those outages, as I understand it, tend to occur after 20 years. In the first 20 years, underground power lines are far more reliable. After 20 years, they're less reliable. It's a balancing act. Currently, my vote is that we spend our money on getting our energy production costs down before we saddle our members with huge costs to underground our power lines. My wife doesn't like that answer. But I think it's the reasonable one, given the fiduciary responsibility that the board has in running this cooperative. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Alan Smith. Underground lines. Everybody likes them. except the guys are going to have to take care of them. But if you're starting from scratch, the best thing to do for your distribution lines is to underground them. Most of the newer subdivisions that go in today, they're in the neighborhoods, they're underground. To underground transmission lines, of course, is very expensive, and it'll hit home to the people living out here. You've got one leg coming out to Princeville, and the next to loop it coming in from the eastern side of the island. There's going to be some undergrounding issues that need to be faced, and that's going to cost us some money. Right now, we're incurring debt to quickly convert as fast as we can to our renewable projects, and that's putting us in debt, and we can carry only so much debt. So, you know, the good stuff like undergrounding lines and buying a new building for our staff at a lower rate, these things are on the burner, but priorities. You can only do so much so soon. But the concept of undergrounding lines are always good. You do have some setbacks in maintenance and so on, and it's more difficult to construct, et cetera. But, yeah, if we can afford it, fine. In most cases, in the neighborhoods, newer subdivisions, undergrounding is marvelous. Thank you. This is Alan Smith, signing off to Jonathan Jay.
Boy, I tell you, these wires. Maybe we should underground the wire. No, just kidding. Undergrounding is very attractive for a number of reasons. You have the view planes that get opened up. You don't have wires stretching across our beautiful island anymore in the sky plane. And they're hurricane-proof. So I think it's attractive. People desire that. But then you have to balance that with the expense. And it's not cheap to do all that digging, and it's not easy to get access to them after they're under the ground. However, there are specific places, like where the Shearwaters have their transportation corridors along the Wailua River is one example. And I think KIC had a lawsuit for several years there. Very expensive, multi-million dollars. Finally resolved it. I think everyone's really glad that that happened. And there's going to be some undergrounding of the cables there. In fact, they're going to not only go underground, they're going to go under the river underground. So when it's appropriate, it seems like it's good. It might be nice if we could do it everywhere, just wave a magic wand, and then all the wires would be gone. But I don't think that's realistic. So it's the right thing to do in the right places where it's the right thing to do. And we're always looking for those opportunities. So, yeah, underground cables. That's what I have to say about that.
Stu Burley, returning to you again. Underground cabling. I live in Lawai Valley, and we have underground cabling. And I have never seen a KIUC worker up there digging a hole yet. Now, maybe with all that 200 inches of rain we get, maybe that washes away the bad stuff. I don't know. But underground cabling is very expensive. Back home in New York many years ago, my family owned a trailer park, huge trailer park, and we'd put everything underground. It was fantastic. It didn't have any of those wires hanging up there, and the kids couldn't get their kites strung out on the wires. It was great. But you come here, and I've heard a rumor. This is a few years ago. I heard a rumor, and I asked, how much will it cost to put the cabling, the electrical wires, underground? And the answer was, this is what I was told, $8 million a mile. Now, you start looking between here and Lihue, that's quite a few million dollars to put underground. And you know how long that would take? Years and years. So, pretty expensive. Jonathan touched on the Shearwaters, and I know one place that KIUC did go, take the wires down, the electrical wires down, and put them along the bridge. So basically, put them underground. And that was at Hanapepe River. Thank you. My name is Stu Burley. To Jack.
Aloha. My name is Jack Benzie, and whether we put the power lines underground or leave them on poles is like a lot of decisions that will have to be made. And when you're making those decisions, you need to look at all the data and evaluate the data and decide what is the best course of action to take. I had always thought that underground would be ideal because it would reduce your amount of maintenance a lot because you wouldn't have cars running into telephone poles or wind blowing the lines down or whatever. But if, in fact, it's a 20-year life on those wires underground and then you got to start digging them up to do a lot of maintenance on them, then maybe it's pretty close to the 20-year hurricane cycle that blows all the wires off the poles. I don't know. Certainly, I don't think... I agree with Jonathan that there are some specific applications where it's good to put wires, at least not in the air, along a bridge or underground, whatever. But I think there are also, for a massive conversion of all of our pulled wires to underground wires would be a huge undertaking that I don't know that we would want to just go do instead of some of the other projects that are much higher priority on the radar right now. Certainly, we're past due on a hurricane. If a hurricane comes through in the 3 years that I'm on the board, if you elect me, then that would be a decision that would all of a sudden move to the top of the priority, and we'd have to talk about when we're everything we have to redo, should we be redoing it underground at that point? And we would look at the data. How long will it last before our maintenance costs go through the roof and our members have to incur more costs? We want to do what's best for the membership because that's what a co-op is. It's a group of people getting together as members to work for their mutual benefit and meeting their need for electricity. My name is Jack Benzie, and I would appreciate one of your votes. Thank you.
Well, this is Carol Bain. I believe we have consensus. Being the last to speak on this, after Hurricane Iniki, I think we all kind of asked maybe it would make sense to have them underground. I happen to live in a community that was built right after a Hurricane Iniki in the early 90s and benefit from a nice view plane. But I am aware of the prior CEO, Randy, he did explain that the research does show that after 20 years, corrosion occurs. And there is another reality that when an outage occurs, you can actually physically see where the break is, and that helps the linemen find the outage. So as was mentioned, we do have a habitat conservation plan, and there are specific areas. Kealia has been one area where, to help the endangered species, they've put the wires underground there, and they've that was very expensive. They've also put the wires underground to the Wailua Bridge. So they're very expensive to do it. Where we do it to help our endangered shearwaters, we do, but just for visual viewplane, we should be very careful about the cost. So I think the decision is in. We just cannot afford it. So that is our, I think, the six-member consensus at this point. Aloha, I'm Carol Bain. Next question, please.
Okay, this is for Alan Smith. Knowing that KIUC is well on its way towards a significant amount of affordable renewable energy within the next 4 years, what concerns do you have for KIUC in the mid- to long-range future?
We have good projects coming online, as was stated, within the next 4 years. But we should not be complacent and say this is it. We still have a long way to go. People keep harping on us. We're the highest rates in the United States, and you know, we're all to blame for that, and no sense crying about it. It's what we're going to do about it. I think our pursuit of hydroelectricity to see if we can or cannot do it should be played out. Other forms of sustainable energy like ocean power,
new technology should be explored, and we should continue our efforts, definitely, to get away from fossil fuels. Keeping our dollars here on the island, like our biomass project, is a good one, although we're still burning things, but it's still better than buying from offshore. As we move forward, our financial responsibility, we should increase our equity. We're at 25%, and we should bring that up more to make us more stable. So we can do things like putting up buildings and undergrounding our lines and getting new technology and generation equipment that we can be more, we can cut our overhead. These are things that we consistently need to look at. The curtain doesn't close in the next 4 years. We need to keep moving ahead as fast as we can. Thank you. This is Alan Smith, passing on the microphone.
Oh. It's good to hear that. Yeah. One of the things that I think the KAC should really start focusing on for the next 10 years is reducing demand. Reducing demand. We have a supply and we have demand issues for our electrical grid, and people are always looking at new ways to create power to meet our power consumption needs. You have ocean power, which Alan just mentioned. Biomass project is a pretty good project. People talk about wind power on Maui. Maybe it's not appropriate in all locations here. But it's always always generation. Let's have another generation solution. Well, you can't meet your supply and demand if you're only looking at one half of the picture. You gotta look at the whole picture, which means we gotta look at demand and reducing our demand. For example, right now on Kauai, there's about one third of the homes have solar hot water on the roof. And that's great, because what it does is it takes electricity out of the equation for making hot water, which here in the tropics, it's a really good idea. But that's only one third of the houses. We need to see if we can get that up higher. And it's good for KIUC if KIUC can be helpful in helping that happen. Because for every kilowatt of power that KIUC does not need to generate to make somebody's water hot with electricity, that's frees up the existing capacity on the grid. For example, if we are able to go to 90% penetration of roof for solar hot water over the next 10 years, that would reduce your average residential consumption by about 25 to perhaps as much as 40% of your electrical use at home. Well, that's the residential use is not the entire grid. There's also the commercial stuff. But if we could just take down our entire peak consumption down 10%, that frees up over seven megawatts of power that we would therefore have available for us with not having to build anything new. And that means that we can save money, and then save money means our rates will go down, and that's what we all need to be looking for. Everybody knows when you want to make new power, the first thing you should do is take a look at your existing consumption and bring it down, see where you can live with, and see if you can make some wise choices and have a good lifestyle, but just be smarter about how you use it. I'm Jonathan Jay, and I went over slightly with my time there. Thank you.
And over to me. I'm Stu Burley. And Jonathan hit on reduced demand. And one of the ways that you can reduce demand, one way I did it, and hopefully everyone on Kauai, all the members on Kauai that uses electricity, they can do it also. I was fortunate in the early stages to receive it's called an echo meter or economy meter. And it's in my home, and I've talked about this before, and it sits in my living room. It's a great nightlight. It also tells me what I'm using. And when I have my grandkids come in and they open the refrigerator and leave it open, they start turning on three or four bedrooms. Wow. So that little economy meter tells me that, and it updates every 10 seconds, how much I'm using, and about what the cost is at that moment. Now, when it's amber, that's just normal. That's every day. If it goes green, that means most of the lights are out, all the refrigerators are closed, and I'm not paying very much, and I'm using very, very, very little electricity. And when it goes red, of course, when I use my microwave, it always goes red. But when it goes red and no one's using the microwave, I start looking around to see what is left on. What can I turn off? And I can usually find the culprit that's making my ecometer, economy meter, turn red. I'm Stu Brilli, still asking for a vote. Thank you.
Aloha. I'm Jack Benzie, and I think the question had to do with mid- and long-range future goals for the utility once we reach our current renewable energy goals. And I think it's great that we are on track and we are going to reach those current goals. I think those goals don't need to be a stopping point, though. As with any goals that we set for ourselves, when we get close to reaching them or when we reach them, it's time to set new goals to move on. And I don't think we want to let our renewable conversion and our sustainable Kauai conversion stop at 50% or wherever our current goal is. We want to continue to let that grow so we can eventually be 100% self-contained island and not have to rely on outside sources. So I think that should continue to be part of our goal, just renewed with new limits that we're shooting for. But in addition to that, I think one of our goals should be to increase member participation in what the utility is doing, however it is that we can increase that, whether it's, you know, I think it was mentioned that of the 26,000 or 30,000 members, whatever the number is that we have, only 5,000 or 6,000 of them even come out to vote for the board of directors. We should get more participation, more people interested in helping the utility make the decisions that are in their best interest. Let us know what their requirements are. There's a lot of areas in the renewable energy portfolio that we haven't looked at much yet for various different reasons, but certainly looking in the long-range future, things like ocean energy, ways to harness some of that. We have ocean 360 degrees all the way around us. If there were ways to harness some of that, it could be more permanent type energy generation as opposed to where solar works great when the sun's out, but when the sun's not out, it doesn't work so good. So there's things like that, and I think the smart grid should also be part of our future plan so that we can have a grid that allows us to conserve where we can. We can all have eco meters in our houses so we know when we're using more than we need to use. And I'm Jack Benzie, and I humbly ask for one of your votes. Thank you.
Aloha. My name's Carol Bain. I love the idea of reaching our current goals, 50% by the year 2023. It's going to take a lot of work to get there, and I'm committed to do that. It's one of the reasons why I'm running again. I believe that we can do it. Frankly, there's big tasks ahead reaching that 50%. Hydro is ahead of us, and it's going to take a lot of support from all of you listening, and we want a lot of input from you along the way to make sure that that works. I'm glad to hear, yes, we want energy efficiency. What's interesting is that KIMC has average residential monthly kilowatt hours down 10% since 2007. So conservation and efficiency is already on the workbench. I mean, yes, we want to continue it, but KIUC as a cooperative is fully aware conservation and efficiency is part of the plan. We've got many programs that are already in place. Certainly, we want to continue them. We do have a solar loan program, solar rebate program. We have incandescent bulb exchanges. I had realized that it's over 100,000 incandescent bulbs that we've exchanged. Home audits are offered, heat pump water heating program. We have instant $50 rebates. I'm holding up a sign that offers $50 rebates for Energy Star refrigerators and appliances. We could double that.
We could make that $150. We could triple that. So, yes, there are things that we can do to be more energy efficient and for more conservation.
Thank you,
I'm
Carol.
I'm Carol Bain.
Jan?
Hi, this is Jan Tenbruggen, Kate, seeking support for a reelection effort to the board of KIUC. Our long-range planning future, our short-range future is such that 3 or 4 years ago, we had documents on paper but no projects in place. Today, we have projects in place that are going to get us to 50% renewable. Nobody thought that was possible 10 years ago. People talked about an energy future, back in the oil crunch of the 1970s. It's never gotten anywhere. It's now getting someplace. We're moving aggressively forward. We're going to have half of our power on sunny days coming from the sun. We're going to have in a couple of years 10, 11, 12% of our power coming from burning wood chips. In a short period of time, we're likely to know how much hydroelectric power we're going to be able to produce. The next step is how do we get the next 50%? Nobody knows how to do that. That's something that we're going to have to work together on as a community and identify the really unique ways that you get that last 50%. Nobody else in the country is doing this stuff. We're doing it alone. We're making decisions about an energy future that's really remarkable and unlike anything anyone has ever seen in this country. And it's an exciting time to be involved. Thank you very much.
We are at 7:30. We have a half hour left of this forum. We just finished a rather comprehensive question. There are two remaining questions that are simpler to answer, if we allow them to be. How many in the room have a question that they would like to ask? Okay, it doesn't look like we have burning questions. So we will just continue with this format. If we had questions that were looking, I think that we could go through these quickly and then be able to take some live questions. But we will continue as this is. We are at Jonathan J. Could solar PV farms replace some of the GMO fields on the sunny west side, putting the land to a locally beneficial, sustainable use? And could KIUC approach the landowners to suggest such a transition?
Wow. That sounds great. I would say that sounds super fantastic, and I think there's a lot of people on this island who would very much love to see that happen. I guess it sort of depends on who the landowners are and if they're interested in playing ball that way, and what their lease agreements are with the GMO folks who are presently farming, 12,000 acres or so on Kauai. I think it would certainly be a step in the right direction as far as our energy sovereignty and energy self-sustainability, energy self-reliability here on the island. So I would absolutely strongly encourage that very scenario. That sounds less like a question and more like an ideal. My name is Jonathan Jay, and I humbly ask for one of your 3 votes. Thank you.
This is Stu Burley again. And when you look at the west side, I've got to go back a little bit and say each community is different. And each community should be able to try and find different power generations. And as an example, the west side, Ke Kaha Waimea especially, where the people there don't even know what rain is. And so if they were to go all solar, they would make out. Now you start getting into the southern Kauai, and with all the water, they should probably look at more ocean energy, but let's stick to the west side. Having the west side all solar would be a great benefit for them only, and I would strongly promote that. as I have done in the past, and also try and get around the pier of Waimea some ocean projects, or look at what the ocean's doing. There's a current down there of 1.7 knots, and if there was something underwater that could turn and generate electricity right under the pier, that could, from a study that I helped do, that could provide power to the entire town of Waimea. So I strongly believe that Kekau would be a great solar area. Waimea under the pier could be another great power generation area. And my name is Stu Burley, and I thank you.
Aloha. My name is Jack Benzie, and if I understood the question right, the land use on the west side?
Yes. Let me repeat the question because we've moved a little bit away from it. Could solar PV farms replace some of the GMO fields on the sunny west side, putting this land to a locally beneficial, sustainable use? And could KIUC approach the landowners to suggest such a transition?
Okay, well, in general, I think on a small island like we have, having large PV farms on land that use up the land is not an ideal use of the land. I think we have a lot of members that all have rooftops that are available, and there's places that we could put the PV to get the right amount of PV that would be the right percentage of our portfolio for generating renewable energy. But I think the land on the west side certainly has a lot to offer. I know there are that the ag co-op that's on the west side there is working with several private companies to take the methane waste from the pig farms they have over there and use that to generate electricity. They're also looking at putting in some hydro on the aquifers that they have that are bringing the irrigation water down to the ag lands and generating hydro with that same water that's then irrigating their fields for them. So I think there is a lot that KIUC can benefit and all the members can benefit from power generation that happens over on the west side there. I don't know that any particular land needs to be taken away from anybody that has it. I think it's mostly state land over there that people are just leasing anyway. But there is a bunch that's owned by the ag co-op as well. But I think there is a good use for that land, and KIUC could benefit from that. And my name is Jack Benzie, and I humbly ask for one of your three votes.
Aloha, I'm Carol Bain. Well, if the economics are there and the money is there, if the feasibility study is done and solar PV farms pay out, I don't see why it shouldn't be done. The proposal should be made and should be considered. All things should be on the table. And if it makes sense, if the amount of electricity generated makes a good economic decision and makes power for the cooperative, there's no reason why it shouldn't be reviewed, looked at as a feasible, and if the money is there and they can make money, more money doing that than through the current growth that they're doing and the current projects, I think it should be considered. All ideas should be on the table. That's my opinion. Aloha.
Was Carol Bain.
This is Jan Tenbruggen, Kate. Realistically, it's provocative to combine the discussion of energy with the discussion of GMOs, but we already have plans on the drawing board, leases in place, financing done, to put 45 megawatts of solar power on our grid. Our Sunday afternoon power is at 55 megawatts. 60 or 70 more acres will supply all of the solar power that this island requires on sunny days on Sunday. Every bit of our power could be produced by solar with very little additional solar acreage. So to talk about solar arrays as a solution to a perceived GMO problem just isn't realistic, and we shouldn't hold that out. Thank you. This is Jan Ten Bruggen, Kate.
Alan Smith. The rule of thumb on photovoltaic system presently is about 5 acres, 4 to 5 acres per megawatt. So if we our load's about 60 megawatts, half of that's going to be solar. So our load was 100 megawatts, 5 acres times 100 is 500 acres. We have 10,000 acres out there. So we got plenty of room. So fear not. There's room for everybody, whether you like it or not. Whatever the people grow and for what reasons is that's none of our, we're not speaking to that tonight, but we have ample room for, expansion of photovoltaic, projects. But let's look at the new technology. There is something very interesting occurring, putting photovoltaic on our highways. And, you think, oh, that could be unstable, could be slippery, it could be a myriad of engineering problems, but it's being worked on. And you multiply the number of road surfaces we have here on Kauai or anywhere else, and we can harness that for photovoltaic power, that would be very, very advantageous. But we have a lot of open land, a lot of fields, any kind of fields, whether it's cane fields or wheat fields or corn fields, or there's enough room for all of us. Thank you.
All right.
Alan Smith.
So, Stu Burley, you have this last question, and I'm looking around the room. Any burning questions? No one burning questions yet? Okay, we will have one. So I see Marge. Are you wanting to target your question to an individual, or are you trying to get the whole line? So we're just going to ask a little bit of this, and then we've got a quick question left on the group, but I wanted to allow people to have their... Is this for an individual or for everyone?
Whoever wants to answer this. This has been a burning issue with me since I go to just about every board meeting for the last 3 years. And most recently, the current chair of the board will allow testimony from anyone. It used to be that you had to be a member.
Is this turned on?
Yes. Okay. You had to be a member in order to participate in the meetings. Fortunately, with the current board members, that has changed. And thank you very much, current board members, for doing that. And Stu, I think you were on that board when that happened. However, going to the meetings and asking a really relevant question, the chair will not allow an answer to the person who has taken the time to go to the meetings in the middle of the week, in the middle of the day. I would like to know, those of you currently on the board or wish to be on the board, if you have any thoughts about that. Because in my opinion, this discourages member and non-member participation in what was discussed earlier in one of the questions. Well, if somebody really has a point of view, all they have to do is say it. But if you have a question, it doesn't get answered, and people get discouraged. A lot of people literally are illiterate on this island. I don't know if you people know that, but they are. They would not be able to write a letter or maybe even speak in the English language to get their answers. So whatever anyone wants to say, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll start it off. That's very interesting, Marge. Even on the board, when you used to ask questions, I guess I didn't realize that we weren't allowed to answer But it's something if I do get elected to the board, I would like to discuss that with the board on having a if you ask a question, we should be able to provide some type of an input back to you, whether it's from the chairman or whether it's from one of the members. And that's open communications. That's what it should be. And that's something that I would try and promote if I get elected to the board.
Thank you, Stu Burley.
Hi, I'm Jack Benzie, and I'd like to take a stab at that one too, Marge. I think it's good that people come and ask questions of the board. If the question is something that the board has already addressed, then I think it would be appropriate for the board to give that answer to the person who's asking the question right at that point. If it's a question that the board hasn't considered yet, I don't know that it would be appropriate for one member of the board to give an answer to that question at that time. But the board should take that on board, discuss that issue, and then give feedback to the person who asked the question, as well as to the rest of the membership, as to here's the things that were brought up, and here's what we considered, and here's what the decision is that was made. I don't think any of us as members want one member of the board going off and making a decision and answering for the entire co-op, but I think it is important that anybody who takes the time to ask a question of the board, that the board consider that, come up with a decision, and provide that feedback.
Thank you. Jack.
This is Jonathan Jay. I think that you've asked a very provocative question, Marge, and I think that when you do ask questions like that, you deserve an answer. What if in this moment right here, right now, none of us responded to your question? We just said, thank you very much for your question. Would you feel like that was a reasonable conversation that was going somewhere and arriving at a greater clarity? So I agree with you about that. And so I'm pleased to give you an answer. I'm pleased to respond to your question. And I think that if in this one place KIEC can make a subtle shift in terms of how it is approaching dialogue and communication with members, keeping in mind that the best kinds of communication are always two-way, that I think KIEC would really be improving as a cooperative, as an organization. And so I hope that's the direction the KIEC will go. And that's certainly the direction that I would like to be a part of if I were to be elected to the board of directors.
Thank you, Jonathan Jay.
Alan Smith. Questions are always welcome. You can ask a question and you expect an answer, and I think some indication from the leadership should indicate we can answer you now, we'll answer you later, we need to research this. There's a difference in asking a question and getting an answer, or getting an answer later, versus engaging our board members in a conversation during a meeting. We follow the Robert's Rules of Order. We have a written agenda. We act on the agenda items, and anything other than that, we just there to listen. And if an immediate answer can be given, Ms. Dent, good and well. But if it needs to be consulted with staff or some research, I think indications should be given to you that we will answer you by phone, by letter, by a certain date. I think we owe that to anybody, for that matter. So, and that's my understanding of how we operate. And if there's a different impression that we're irresponsive or irresponsible, by all means, we need to hear it. That's why we need to keep talking to each other. But during a meeting where business is being discussed, I think there's a difference in engaging in conversation versus posing a question to the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ellen Smith. Carol Bain?
I sense the frustration because having been on both sides, and I do recall, for instance, once you were asking some very basic questions, like I think you wanted to understand some of this, the electric utility nomenclature. You wanted to, I think the term was, what was NEM? What is NEM? Or what is TIER? What is TIER? These were real basic questions, and we, I wanted, and I think Karen Baldwin, who was new, and we both wanted to tell you quite right there, oh, it's net energy metering, and so, oh, it's timed interest earned ratio. So you could understand it, but our chair felt that, no, we don't want this dialogue, and we'd prefer that we give you these terms later. And it is frustrating because you want your answers right then. So that is the frustrating part, where you come before and you have a question. What is preferred is that, yes, you state your question, or perhaps you talk to one of the directors and get your question answered separately, or you go ahead and submit it through the email where we can, or to a staff member, and then you can get a full, if it's a technical question, answer. But some of the, you were asking at one point some really basic questions, and I can sense your frustration. Sometimes it's a very simple, straightforward answer, and yet at a board meeting, maybe it's even a yes, no, or a very quick answer that we're not able to answer you. And it is frustrating.
So thank you, Carol.
But I thought I should share that with you.
Jan, and then when we're done with this question, I'm going to let all the board be able to, the candidates for the board to be able to say what they think is the most pertinent for the listening public to hear. Then after, we're going to do a few more questions, but we will be off the air pretty soon. So, Jan, you can finish this question.
Yeah, this is Jan Tenbruggen, Kate. Very simply, I appreciate the opportunity to converse with members at our board meetings and encourage it, and think that that we ought to hear them and talk to them. And Robert's Rules of Order is no reason to prevent that from happening. It's really easy to suspend the rules if necessary, to recess a meeting so you can talk to your members. That ought to happen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jan. Ellen, you're next. So we're going to go down, and I want you to have the most critical comment that you want to close with for today, though then afterwards we will be taking more questions.
The most critical comment is, I hope that my appearing before you gave you some indication of who I am, and that I am capable and trustworthy and honorable enough to gain your vote of confidence to continue serving you as a director of the Kauai Island Utilities Cooperative. My parents are 92 years old. They live out in Kekaha. They're alive and very well, and they pay $125 a month for the electric bill. They have a solar heater on their roof, and they keep telling me, you know, boy, oh, thank you for that term, keep doing what you're doing. It's important for the really young ones and the ones that are not here yet. And, you know, coming from them, they pay attention to it. They retired 40 years ago, so they got Social Security and a great big pension from the plantation. So, you know, they're not traveling to...
It's not that big.
Yeah. They travel to the mainland once in a while. And they, all six of us, they got four kids and two of them at six. All six of us are retired and collecting Social Security and living on fixed incomes. So it's very important that we keep our rates from going up too fast and keep them stable. And doing this to make this really a better place to live. I live in Lihue, and I want to introduce my wife, Linda, who just recently retired from being a principal at Kauai High School for the past 25 years, and try to stamp out illiteracy on the island. Thank you very much, dear. And thank you for listening. This is Alan Smith passing the microphone on.
Thanks, sir. I can remember when I was a kid. I used to watch baseball games with my grandfather. And he had a new TV he was real pleased with. And after the game was over and the watching was done, he would not only turn the TV off, but he would unplug it. And I would ask him, "Grandfather, why are you doing that?" And he explained to me that it was a new TV with instant on. He was very proud of this. But he didn't want to have to pay for instant on all night long. So he would unplug it. And I said, "Well, why do you unplug it?" And he says, "Hey, kid, what do you own stock in the electric company?" Well, here in Kauai, we do. We do. This is our co-op. And that means that as the member owners of this cooperative, we all play a direct role in how it's going to evolve, how it's going to change, the direction it's going to go. You know, we can try and come up with supply-side solutions for all of our power needs. We can build atomic power plants here in Kauai. Some people running for this position have suggested that in the past. I don't think that's a very good idea. But you folks in the room and you folks listening at home or in the car, wherever you are, we are the co-op. We are the co-op. We have an excellent staff there, and we have an excellent leadership team that's sitting beside me and in the audience tonight. And these guys, they will do what we tell them to do because that's their job. As an architectural designer, my background is coming up with creative problem solving. As a community organizer, my background is to bring people together. And as the co-host of the show, Out of the Box, trying to focus on bringing forward the power of human creativity and the power of imagination, because those are unlimited resources. Unlimited resources. We just got to tap them. My name is Jonathan Jay, and I'm very much hoping that you will consider one of your votes, one of your three votes for me this evening, because I would love to be on the board of directors, and I would love to help serve and help bring Kauai Island Utility Cooperative forward into the future that we know it can have. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.
I'm Stu Burley, back here, and my closing comments, I have to think of what I do with the schools. I'm retired, and so I go into the schools, the high schools, middle schools, and even over here I've done Kilauea and Hanalei, and most of the schools on this island I have been in to mentor as many children as I could, as many classes as I could. I mentor in high-tech rocketry and underwater robotics. And that gives your kids, your grandkids, a chance to improve. But what do I talk to them about? Oh, we're building, yes, but I try and form teamwork. In the class has to have teamwork. And then once the teamwork gets together and the class responds as a team, then we go outside and get the parents, and then they have to come in and have teamwork, part of us. Then after that, we go out to get grants, and that becomes a team. So what I would like to see is real teamwork between the board and the members of KIUC. We are one team. We are a member cooperative. We all own the co-op, and we have to maintain that teamwork and work together so that we're all on the same page. I would like for you to consider voting for me when the ballots come out. It was mentioned earlier, I'll just make a comment on that. It was mentioned earlier that how many ballots are sent out and only about 6,000, 7,000 are sent back. Wouldn't it be great if every member voted? Now that is teamwork. Thank you very much.
Stu Burley was that.
Aloha. My name is Jack Benzie, and I agree with a lot of what's been said here tonight, and I think it would be great if everyone out there listening took it to heart to do their responsibility as a member of this co-op and vote for the candidates of your choice. I agree with a lot of what a lot of people said here tonight. I think I bring both a technical and a leadership background to the board if elected. I've spent 36 years in the public service sector, and although I've retired from working for the U.S. government, I would like to continue serving in the capacity of the utility here. I seem to, for whatever reason, have always received assignments to go places where there was some percentage of people that weren't happy with what was going on, and able to work through and figure out what's really going on and come up with creative ways to work together to move forward so that we could all progress toward a brighter future for all of us. And I would hope to do that if elected as a member of the board here at KAUC. And that's really my pertinent point, I think. So with that, I humbly ask for one of your three votes and pass it on to Carol.
Thank you. The election season is the best time. We get to really talk about all the solutions. Tonight you've heard all six of us. Everyone at this table wants to help this cooperative improve, get better. You've had the benefit of listening to some really good ideas tonight. All of us want to help this cooperative. And it's really good to have full and open discussion. It's the best thing about an election. Every year you get to choose three candidates. And yes, as I'm Carol Bain, I do hope that you will vote for Carol Bain as one of those three. I do have the experience and dedication to do the hard work ahead. And I want to acknowledge that Ed Call, my husband for 45 years, drove me here tonight. And thank you for supporting me, Ed, and getting me here safely and seeing me through this time. And we've got a lot of hard work together, and I would like to serve the next 3 years helping KIUC in this cooperative. I do want every member of this cooperative to look for that white envelope. Don't think that it's advertising in there. There is a ballot and a voter's guide. Do not discard it. Don't put it aside thinking you'll do it later because it'll get lost with all the other pieces of paper. Vote immediately. You have three ways to vote. One is online, one is with a phone, and the other is, of course, through the mail. There are instructions in there. Again, I'm Carol Bain. I'm asking for one of your votes, and it's now Jan's turn.
Hi, this is Jan Tenbruggen, Kate. I'll be short. One of the cool things about running for this office and sitting in this office is you get to save the world. We're moving this island and this cooperative in a place where nobody else is going. We're going to get off of oil here. Within 3 or 4 years, we'll be 50% off, and within probably 10 years after that, we'll be 100% off. We won't be using any. In the meantime, the important thing that this question addressed, the important thing is you folks. You've got to get out there and vote. Other members, other candidates here have said it. We're getting 33% or so turnout. It's not enough. We need indications from our members that they care about what we do, and you do that by voting. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea.